I'm Spencer Beckwith for KUNM. On view this summer at the Albuquerque Museum is the exhibit Drawing into Architecture. It includes almost 300 works on paper, along with architectural models, representing, in a small way, the 50-year career of Antoine Prédoc. Mr. Prédoc is an international force in the world of architecture. His projects, from large public structures to private homes, have been built in China, Canada, Japan, Taiwan, the Middle East, and the Russian Federation. His many American structures spread from California to New York State. But his practice, his architectural studio, is located in Albuquerque. And Antoine Prédoc's stunning structures are visible throughout New Mexico. George Pearl Hall and the Law School Building at the University of New Mexico, the Spencer Theater outside Ruidoso, the La Luz development on Albuquerque's west side, and many, many more. These achievements over his 50 years as an architect have brought Antoine Prédoc numerous honors. The American Institute of Architects' prestigious Gold Medal in 2006 and the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum. This morning, we are with Mr. Prédoc at his Albuquerque studio. Mr. Prédoc, Antoine Prédoc, thank you so much for allowing us to come in where you work.
It's my great pleasure.
First of all, tell us, if you would, about this space. What kind of working environment did you want to create for yourself and for those who are working with you?
Well, I got to go back to the 70s. After living in Alameda on a ranch, two young kids, fairly freshly married, and made the big move to come downtown. And in doing so, I made a big decision, for better or worse, to live where I worked, because I thought that architecture is something that I'd always live rather than a job or going to work. I got it right away from Don Schlegel, my first professor in architecture here at UNM. He really lived his work, and it was not a job. And I felt the same way. He lit the flame, and I still feel that way, although finally, at one point, it got to be too cacophonous, let's just say, and too many all-nighters being pulled around me. So now I live away from the studio. But the idea was a working compound that had a dance studio, architectural studios, a home for my family, my kids, and all that goes along with that. So I think the point of it is to create a space for me and my colleagues that's not an office in any way, has any kind of corporate taint, to avoid that and keep it studio-like.
And I feel a bit like I'm at the exhibit at the Albuquerque Museum, because we are surrounded in this conference room by wonderful drawings by you, both ink on paper and watercolor, pastels. They're all around us here.
I'm kind of a hoarder about that stuff. I mean, they're my babies. Every drawing has a complete history. I could do a mini lecture on every single drawing you see on the wall. The encounter with a great building historically or the development of a project is kind of the same thing. It's an encounter, an interpersonal encounter with a project or a place or culture or people. I've always liked to array it, so it's kind of an archive made visible right now.
If I may, I want to give just a brief biographical sketch to get us started. You grew up in Missouri, in Lebanon, Missouri. You came to Albuquerque in the 1950s to study at UNM. You then transferred to Columbia University in New York City, where you received your architectural degree. You returned to Albuquerque to start your practice. Why?
My spiritual home. Cliche, I know, but it truly is. So many people know how catching this place is. You get the virus, and, you know, there it is. The whole new world. I mean, I'd never been to New York City, and I'd only been to Missouri, the environs of St. Louis, and New Mexico, and that was it. And I went away to Columbia for so many reasons. They were fantastic. I mean, just the city is a laboratory, for one thing, and then a great school, and then on to a fellowship in Spain. I went to Europe, bought a motor scooter, drove it from Italy to Paris, then to Istanbul. Did many of these drawings along the way. I chose Spain because of New Mexico and my interest in the cultural depth here. It got to me. The power of the place got to me at a lot of levels, and that was one obvious way. The cultural strata of New Mexico that goes so deep with the latecomers, the Spanish and the gringos, overlaying a vast geologic depth, vast cultural depth. I always thought of it as kind of a road cut where you think of architecture as a diagram of that depth. We go to the deepest geology, like where there's a foundation of Precambrian granite and then overlaying strata of Pennsylvania limestone. In New Mexico, that kind of deep time is palpable. So I think that deeper connection to place is so profoundly powerful here compared to other locations in the world.
You have said that New Mexico is a force that entered your system and that you take that force with you wherever you go and wherever you have designed. Is that a force that affects the process that you have as an architect, or is it a force that infects and affects the actual design?
Well, the bottom line is what it looks like, what I make looks like. And I want the things I do to be about the place that they're in and not to be generic solutions that are popped here and there, irrespective of the content of place. There's poetic content of place. It just varies all over the place. I mean, there are places that have diametrically opposed content to New Mexico in terms when you add everything up, but just as powerful in their own way. I mean, Winnipeg, Manitoba, where I just finished the Human Rights Museum. You know, I get pegged as a regionalist. You know, I'm kind of Mr. Adobe from because of La Luz and early work here. And now I just say, okay, I'm a regionalist, but I'm a portable regionalist because it travels. You know, I think that it's a trap, actually, and I thought it became an epithet to be called a regionalist because I was, like, working all over the place. And people still do it, and I just kind of grin and bear it.
Do you think they do it because you have been labeled that way, not because they think of it when they look at your work?
You saw this, some of the stuff out there. Does it look like New Mexico? No.
No.
It looks like the place where, like, Mammoth and Permafrost Museum in Yakutsk, Siberia. Does that look like New Mexico?
No.
Probably
no,
not.
Not too much ice here in New Mexico.
No, I mean, that's the point. In the realm of globalization, wonderful things happen. But then there are aspects of it that's just evil. You know, it's like so many architects kind of do the same thing there that, like, Chinese architects see some hip thing happening here or in Europe or wherever, and they clone it. And American architects go work there, and they take their baggage with them and don't honor the place. That's just a no-brainer for me. I mean, you know, you're an architect, pay attention to the environmental factors, wind, sun, all that's everything like that. You inventory everything about it, and you deploy new technologies, sustainable technologies. You know, I've done pioneering sustainable architecture, and it was never called that because we didn't have the words yet. I was a green architect, so-called, on Good Morning America, and that was the first time somebody decided what I was, I guess. But we always did that with La Luz. It was adobe out of the site into the walls. And, you know, thermal stability. Turn your back on the spring winds, the dusty winds, and allow glimpses of sunset. But, you know, blast open the view to the city lights and the sandias. So everywhere I go, there's some version of thinking about that same kind of stuff.
I'm interested that you brought up geology and the different layers of geology here in New Mexico. Looking at the models in the exhibit at the Albuquerque Museum, which you carve out of clay, the designs feel to me like they are erupting out of that landscape, which is also made of clay in the designs, rather than being placed on the landscape. Can you comment on that?
You've been drinking my Kool-Aid.
No, it's hard not to have that impression. It looks like they're geological movements.
I thank you for that. You've articulated it better than I could. That's the point. Right. Earth to sky. The Dene people know about that. There's Mother Earth and there's Father Sky, and they have mythic connections, and that's what I do.
Is that why you chose to create your models out of clay rather than out of paper or wood or plaster? Or...
I was an art student, paralleling architecture. I wasted a couple of years in engineering doing real well and got all those bad courses out of the way an architect needs, discovered architecture through Don Schlegel.
At UNM.
My friend and professor. And I'm trying to think of when clay came along in my process. I can't say that taking art classes, sculpture classes, using clay in particular for life, modeling life models, aimed me that way. Because I used a special kind of clay. It's called Roma Plastilina. And I discovered it as a student. What's great about it is that it's oil-based and it doesn't harden and crack and you don't have to fire it. I mean, those are some really old models over there, some of the earliest ones.
And they're still
moist. 20 years old and they're still, you know, they get a little funky and cracked and sometimes the temperature's too high, oil will leak out and they'll make puddles of oil on them. But that's part of their lifespan and part of their patina. And it just seemed like a natural medium. Architecture is a spatial art, period. It's about time and space. It's about episodic movement through space, choreographic movement. It's like a movie storyboard, how I approach it. It isn't like making a building and cramming stuff into it. It's creating an episodic journey through time and space. And it's not prescriptive. I mean, it's like however you want to take it on. But generally speaking, there are, whether it's the Padres ballpark in San Diego, which is a highly processional. Baseball fans are cruisers all over the ballpark, and that's a good place to cruise and vantage points along the way. Not unlike a loose trail where you're climbing the mountain, you're getting different vantage points. Those things are like architecture, spatial content, spatial anticipation, prediction about space. So when I'm making a clay model, even though they're solid, you know, I can't very well hollow those out. They're small. But I'm thinking spatially, and that's just, they're not like making kick-ass form for kick-ass form's sake. It's not about that. That's too easy. That's a cop-out. It's about understanding an internal imperative having to do with spatial richness, how light enters, everything like that. So that's the thing about clay. I can do that, and it's malleability. You can erase it. It's like we're drawing with pencil having an eraser. You can change things. You can shift things. And I use a knife. These are very precisely carved.
Right. They're not molded by hand.
No, they're not.
They are carved.
Maybe components now and then are, but they're mainly gestural, like I draw. I mean, that's why they're in a drawing show. Christopher Curtis Mead, Professor Mead, Emeritus Professor UNM, got that within my work a long time ago. He's done two books now and understands that drawing for me is beyond works on paper. It's beyond that.
Wonderful reason to have those models right there in the middle, surrounded by the drawings.
I thought
the
walls that was
the gallery.
Brilliant that he did that curatorially. I mean, that's his project. He curated the whole thing.
Yes,
with my former colleague Mira Woodson, working as a team. But Christopher really really nailed it. So I'm so happy with it.
And he has also written the book that has recently come out from UNM Press.
Yeah, exactly. The timing was set up to converge with the exhibit.
You're listening to KUNM. I'm Spencer Beckwith, and I'm speaking with architect Antoine Predock at his studio in Albuquerque. A show of Mr. Predock's drawings and models is currently on view at the Albuquerque Museum, and a large illustrated companion book is available from UNM Press. This show at the Albuquerque Museum, almost 300 drawings and sketches, as I said, from the 1960s, well, actually the late 1950s to the present day. Some of the drawings are of landscapes and of historical structures, the Pantheon in Rome, for instance. Some are your sketches that you made in preparation for your own designs. For the most part, the drawings are quite simple, almost abstract. They seem more, to me, an impression of what you were looking at rather than a representation.
Once again, that is drinking the same Kool-Aid. Yeah, that's the point. Not to, I think when anybody, when they encounter something, something hits them viscerally, and then there's an action in relation to that. Maybe taking a picture, maybe just a memory, maybe a poetic annotation in a journal or something like that. For me, anything I draw is I just assimilate it. It just all adds up in my system. And the accuracy of the drawings, the analytical aspects are irrelevant to me. They're more of a, you know, I want to kind of get them right. You know, I'm looking at the Cathedral of León north of Salamanca in Spain.
Which is right behind
my back here. Yeah, that's
right
back there. And I got the perspective kind of right. You can see the perspectival traces where, you know, I'm kind of generating the bigger picture. But then other drawings are, you know, like the port of Malaga, fast and immediate. I just never know, you know, when I'm doing it. And when I'm working on my projects, I don't draw analytically either. First of all, clay models rule, and I don't do them every single time out. But when I do, they're the preeminent, what I would call drawing. And then the other drawings I do are very quick notations also. You saw the big butcher paper drawing that had to do with setting up the American Heritage Center in Wyoming.
You call it a collage.
Yeah, the collage for the Arizona Science Center.
Mm-hmm.
Big scale things going on, these research collages that you kind of look at everything, turn over all the rocks. So the collages are inventorying geologic time, inventorying poetic response to a place, a great writer, what they had to say. So their quotes sometimes are arrayed across the image of the collage. So all of it is kind of a jumping in and getting wet into a process. And I never know where it's going to go. I mean, it's like a trail you follow. That's the whole adventure of it. I mean, it's a ride. I always say architecture is a ride. I ride motorcycles. I've always been in motion. And John Gardner, the psychologist, had 10 intelligences. I can't remember. One of them was kinesthetic. And that's so important. The kinesthetic one goes back from running away from saber-toothed tigers and figuring out backflips probably and all kinds of stuff. So when there's something that grabs me, and I've often drawn it.
When I first heard the title of this exhibit, Drawing into Architecture, my assumption was that it was going to be a show about the sketches that you make in preparation for your designs. Now, there are some that are like that.
That's what all these are.
Even the ones that are of landscapes and of historical structures.
Of course.
In what way? How are they related to your own designs?
Well, in life, we soak things up. Borges' labyrinths, you know, his notion of infinite memory, the Library of Babel, and Funes the Memorius in one of his essays remembered everything in his life to the point that it became a prison for him. He heard it. He remembered every fly that buzzed by his ear. He remembered every nuance of the motion of a breeze over his skin, his whole life. So finally he had to go and lock himself in a dark room. Funes took it a little too far there, but I guess he couldn't help it. But it's, for me, life is kind of that way. I mean, you're continually immersed in new stuff. I mean, creating a storehouse of memories that are vividly, for me, part of what I make. They all add up. And it's, you can't say, well, that, you know, that drawing, that experience in wherever that was in Eureka, California, that crazy Victorian house up there, or the Giralda Tower in Seville, can't tell where that shows up, but I know it shows up. I mean, all this, all, you know, you just, it's like you live your life and then you do your work. Well, I just think it's all at once. It doesn't matter if some dumb TV show or watching MSNBC or whatever it is. I mean, you know, the jazz program here, K&M, is spectacular. It's such a nice mixed bag of responses to plates. They're subtle. So I think it has a memory. KUNM is a memory that's we all cherish and should be celebrated. It's, you know, it's an iconic voice in New Mexico.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm Spencer Beckwith, and I'm speaking with architect Antoine Predock at his studio in Albuquerque. I thought of something as I was walking through the exhibit the other day. I heard sometime in my life, and please don't ask me where I heard it, that the best designs are the ones that can be communicated clearly with only a few lines on paper, whether it's architecture or any kind of design. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. When I teach intermittently, I talk to students about the innocent mark. I call it the innocent mark. And every one of us has that. When we sign our name, depending on the freedom we allow, whether we can get back to that second grader we were or the first grader and we're free and nobody said, oh, what is that you're drawing? Or, hey, color this coloring book, you know, and then screw your whole life up forever. If we can get back to that and sign our name in a way that is deeply within, coming from within us, that's an innocent mark. So many things can be summed up with an innocent mark, your signature or whatever. So my drawings are kind of that way. You know, I don't do it self-consciously. It's just that that's how I draw. They're gestural, immediate. Some I think are over-elaborated. And I look back at them, I say, you know, over-elaborated. But some of my very best ones are just like a signature.
Many of the preparatory drawings for your own designs, I noticed, are very simple, horizontal, almost few line signature of what turned out to be a very complicated building, almost as if you distilled it down to a little hieroglyph. And I'm wondering about that process and how that happens and where that comes from.
Well, I'm thinking maybe in terms of, since I didn't have any history of drawing as a kid or anything, and just architecture was a bucket of cold water in the face, and in art classes at UNM all at the same time, literally, I had some teachers that John Tatchell, the sculptor, really taught me how to look at things, how to, instead of like drawing what I think something is, to understand its geometric silhouette, its internal makeup, whether it's a human figure or whether it's some object, and really get it right, but not make it like a facsimile, but to deal with it in ways of in abstraction that honored what I was drawing, but got down to the really basic form. He was influential to me for sure, but it just seemed to kind of grow, become a fusion. But you know, I was just so unbelievable. I was architecture and fine arts slammed together, you know, literally at the same moment, late 50s, early 60s. And UNM was really cooking. I mean, Diebenkorn had done his master's here. He was just a couple of years gone when I got here. My painting teacher was Elaine de Kooning, for God's sake.
Wow.
And Walter Kuhlman from the Bay Area, that was an advocate of, or acolyte of Clifford Still. So it was just astonishing. You know, looking back, and when I was in that soup, swimming around in it, I didn't even know until I looked back at it. And I think, my God, all this stuff that was cooking there. And there wasn't an architectural realm in New Mexico, I mean, to refer to like a great master working here, like Wright or Kahn or ones that I admired very much as students. But in the art department, there were. I mean, and you met them and you studied with them. Now, there was a master, Don Schlegel, who lit my flame, I mean, literally. But that convergence just made it happen. And to understand that something can be captured with the body. I mean, Elaine de Kooning said painting was a verb, and I got that. The action painters in New York, the, you know, Franz Kline, Rothko, the great painters of that time, really, really inspired me. And I didn't, although I did realistic watercolors with Sam Smith, a master watercolorist. I kind of slept around, you know, in terms of media and how I made things, and depending on the professor I had, and I was very much an innocent about that. With watercolor, that's a classic example. I mean, it is so scary because you know you have to get that to nail it.
Right.
And you don't come back and muddy it up and it doesn't become opaque. It becomes watercolor, transparent watercolor, quote unquote. So that's a gigantic thing to whether it doesn't matter whether you're painting in New Mexico Village or some wildly abstract building of my own designs. I mean, it doesn't matter. There's one from Spain right behind you that, look at those touches. I mean, it's like
right.
Bang, 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 bang. And if I'm hanging around a drawing too long, I'm getting started to wonder what's going on here. You better get out of there.
Knowing when to stop.
Yeah.
Knowing when to stop is very...
Like that one of Campidoglio in Rome, I don't know. I don't like it as well. It's kind of like too much going on. Didn't leave it alone at the right moment.
It's so great to be surrounded by these drawings. One of the questions that I was going to ask you was, what was it like for you to wander through this exhibit at the Albuquerque Museum, seeing 50-plus years of your own drawings? But it's not an unusual experience for you, because here at work, you are surrounded by 50-plus years of drawings and work and models.
Well, I mentioned that everything you've seen there and here is tip of the iceberg. And there were things, literally, I mean, when Christopher and Mira went through thousands of drawings, Christopher Curtis Mead, and Mira Woodson, there are things in the exhibit, I don't even remember them. I can't even ID them the time I did it. But it was astonishing to go through it. I think that, and it was completely hands-off. I stayed so far away from it.
You did not curate it at all.
No, I had nothing to do with it. And he knew what he was doing. I wanted to leave him alone. I mean, I kibitzed about a few things, you know, down to the wire when some things I thought I just didn't like, but he had a reason for it. And I said, okay. But the, 99.9 was just his vision and interpretation. What's great about it, it's not chronological. There was an article written about it where it said it was chronological and was non-chronological. It's all over the place. That's what I thought was so sensitive and curatorially about it, that he'd look at similar kind of moves through the decades, and juxtapose them and kind of develop a thematic surround to, certain groups of images. And, having as many clay models as he put in would just perfect for me. The more the better, because that's where in terms of the buildings themselves, that's where they really dwell in that process with the clay. And when there isn't clay as part of the process, it's the drawings really are the ones that set the stage.
Drawings and sketches from the late 1950s through the present day are on display at the Albuquerque Museum on Mountain Road near Old Town. Drawing into Architecture, the Sketches of Antoine Predock. It runs through October 2nd. For information, visit albuquerquemuseum.org. Also, a companion book to the exhibit is available from UNM Press, unmpress.com. We've been speaking with Antoine Predock at his architectural studio in Albuquerque. Many thanks for having us here and chatting with us.
It's been a wonderful chat, and you brought things out that I hadn't thought of in quite a while. And it's the best kind of close quote interview that you can have, is where those kind of things happen to the interviewee. So, Spencer, you're really good, and it's fun talking to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Predock. To hear this program again, visit kunm.org. For KUNM, I'm Spencer Beckwith.